ready to keep you company wherever you are. Carte Blanche, the podcast, brings you immersive, hard-hitting stories anytime, anywhere, every week.
It's Monday, and that means it's time for another informative episode of The Whole Week Wrap with Daily Maverick and Carte Blanche. Joining us this week is Daily Maverick journalist Ray Mahlaka. Here's what's coming your way. Another tender, another scandal, but it might not be too late. Then it's back to school for ANC members. We ask, what's the point?
There is no school, Liz, that can teach you about ethics and morals and doing the right thing. You know, no school around the world can teach you those principles. It's something that comes innately, something you're born with.
Later, the US elections are here, and it could be an uncomfortably close race. And a win for families as Tiger Brands offers to pay up. But first, this past week's mini-budget was hardly one for the history books. With a strong emphasis on early retirement and public-private partnerships when it comes to infrastructure projects, we unpack some of the key points.
Welcome back to the show, Ray. It's always amazing having you with us. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. It's a brand new month, November, and yeah, this year is nearly over. What, a few more weeks left, about 8 or so, and bye-bye 2024.
Yeah, but on to today's show. And last week was obviously budget week with Finance Minister Enoch Godongwana's delivery of his much-anticipated medium-term budget speech. In summary, his address was short and sweet, but that doesn't mean there's not a lot to unpack. So take us through some of the main points of his address.
I think everybody anticipated this budget because it was the first budget that Godongwana delivered under the government of national unity. And this budget is very important because it gives an idea of the government's spending priorities for the next 3 years. In fact, I thought there'd be a lot of influence in how this budget was assembled or formed, because this new government of national unity, which comprises of the DA, I thought maybe the DA would have a bit of influence in how this budget is compiled. But actually, we didn't see any influence from the GNU partners in how the government plans to spend money or manage public finances going forward. In fact, I would say it is a budget of continuity, because we really saw all the initiatives that the National Treasury did over the past few years. That was a continuation of those initiatives. Initiatives such as the government committing to cutting its debt, no bailouts for SOEs, by the way. And the government is really resisting pressure to spend more public money on services. The government wants to reduce spending. So all of these initiatives were really announced even before the GNU was formed after the May elections. And what we're seeing in this budget here is a continuation of those initiatives.
Now, let's talk about the elephant in the room, and that is, of course, health and education, with a lot of talk being around the loss of jobs and the fact that a national decision regarding budget cuts is now having a debilitating impact on provincial budgets. There really was no mention of this at all, and no sign of additional funding in these sectors. And I'm wondering, is it because the GNU, the Bella Bill, and the NHI, and the conversations that are currently happening, do you think that maybe they decided, let's rather not touch this right now until the various discussions behind closed doors have been wrapped up? Or is the mini budget just not the right forum for this conversation? Why was this excluded almost entirely?
So I think you said it. The mini budget is really not the place to announce new spending measures. In fact, the mini budget is an update to what has already been tabled in February. And back in February, we already knew that the government would not top up the budgets for things like education and health, because the government wants to cut back spending. The economy is weak at the moment, so the government is not really getting enough money or additional money from taxes. So already the government had already laid the framework for reducing its spending. And what we've seen so far from the mini budget is that the government is continuing on its goal of not allocating more money to the budget's for education and health.
And then just to wrap this up, I think the added emphasis on early retirement also struck me, with government allocating an additional 11 billion rands to basically incentivize early retirement of civil servants. Can you explain to us why there's this strong focus on getting public servants to retire early?
That's because the government spends a lot of money every year just to pay South Africa's 1.3 million public servants. In fact, just this year, it'll cost the government about 640 billion rand to pay those public servants. And that amount just gobbles up about 30% of the government's total expenditure. And what the government is trying to do is it wants to reduce that cost to pay public servants by asking some of them to take voluntary servants packages. The government is targeting about 30,000 public servants, some of whom are already older, approaching the 60 age mark. And the government is really trying to ask them to take early retirement. Now, if all 30,000 public servants agree to this retirement package, it will cost the government about 11 billion rand to pay them early retirement benefits. But after the government is through that program, it will now start to save about 2 billion rand every year from having to let go of those public servants. So it's really an initiative aimed at reducing the cost of having to pay public servants every year.
Tender scandals are nothing new. They've become a part of our daily lives, with dodgy deals making headlines far more often than we'd like. However, when Daily Maverick exposed a monstrous tender deal last week, we found ourselves at a loss for words. But with nearly a billion rands at stake, there might still be time to stop the whole thing dead in its tracks. Now, let's move on to a really big expose done by Daily Maverick and Scorpio. Now, last week, Monday, Daily Maverick's Peter Louis Meiber published a really stunning expose that really had a few people's jaws on the floor. It detailed how a little-known company was able to bag a 428 million rand deal to install oxygen plants at various public hospitals. And this despite the company having no previous experience in this kind of service. There's practically no trace of this company anywhere. And then we're not even going to touch on the additional 150 something million rands that's set to be paid to another controversial contractor. So in total, the Department of Health is set to spend about 836 million rands altogether. And it's really been described by many as a digital vibes 2.0. What do you make of this scandal? Because really, the amount of irregularities that are clear as day is just mind-boggling.
I mean, millions are at stake here. And one wonders, surely the Department of Health and whoever is responsible for awarding tenders would just quickly do a Google search of a company before it awards a contract, a multi-million rand contract. Because our Peter Louis Meiber couldn't even establish a digital footprint for this company, let alone see if this company has a website. This company has no website. It's businessman or the person behind this company. We couldn't even find a digital footprint for him. There's no contact details listed for the company. There is no business address listed, or the business address that was listed, it no longer exists anymore. And all of this can be just done through a Google search to do a bit of research and due diligence into this company. But yet again, we find ourselves in this situation.
Exactly. Now, following the publication of the story, we saw the DA speaking out, saying that it just makes no sense to them. And they also raised questions about the promises that were made in 2023 about blacklisting companies and why none of that has happened in the meantime. They also demanded that the Independent Development Trust, or the IDT, appear before the Portfolio Committee on Health to really explain its role in awarding this tender. And then we also had the Public Works Minister telling the IDT, listen, you have until Friday, this past Friday, to provide an explanation. And I mean, that hasn't happened yet at the time of this recording. But with this mounting pressure, perhaps do you see this deal being stopped in its tracks before anything gets signed, any money gets paid over? Or am I just being far too hopeful at this stage?
Let's look at history. With Digital Vibes, had it not been for Pieter Louis Myburgh and Daily Maverick and other media organizations that have followed up the story, there wouldn't have been any accountability measures taken. One wonders again, Liz, had it not been for this journalist writing about this matter, the contract award would have happened. And one hopes that there are accountability measures taken going forward. But you know, Liz, I fear that, you know, what about there being similar contracts with irregularities being awarded that we are not writing about as journalists that are already happening? And I wonder, had it not been for journalists, how much skullduggery would have gone on unnoticed, unwritten about, unspoken about? So again, we are in this kind of situation where, had it not been for journalists doing their job, one wonders the kind of disaster this country would find itself in.
Well, keep an eye on the Daily Maverick website, because from what I've been told, there's more to come in this investigation. There's still a lot more to uncover. So definitely keep an eye on the website for more on that.
American activist Jane Addams once said, "Action indeed is the sole medium of expression of ethics." A saying many ANC members should take to heart when it comes to the ongoing fight against corruption. And while we admire any and all attempts at addressing wrongdoing within the party structures, a compulsory course in ethics is simply not good enough.
Now, let's move into politics, and it's seemingly back to school for the ANC, this in the form of a mandatory political education course. It's titled the Foundation Course on Political Education, and the aim is to, quote, straighten out the ethics and the morals and the values of the organization, unquote. And what Ramaphosa said, to hopefully get rid of factionalism as well, which I think is quite a task in itself. But South Africans are not convinced, with many saying, you know what, just get rid of the bad apples and fix your organization. Why are we going through all of this effort? Just do what's necessary. So do you think this ANC crash course, so to speak, is really the answer to the ANC's problems?
A short answer, no, because there is no school, Liz, that can teach you about ethics and morals and doing the right thing. You know, no school around the world can teach you those principles. It's something that comes innately, something you're born with. What we do have as a problem within the ANC is the lack of integrity, the lack of ethics. People who are easily swayed by inducements, people who are corrupted and corruptible. And also, the ANC has had a political school that has been apparently going on for decades. Maybe let's start there and examine what that school has done, what went wrong, what went right, if there's anything that went right. So I'm a bit skeptical here, Liz. I wonder what do you think about this. Do you think this will be the game changer for ethics and morality?
Not even close. Look, I must admit, when I read through the modules that they're proposing, I had a good giggle. You have things like the history of the ANC and the vision of the ANC for South Africa. But then you also have crash courses on the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and government. And I'm thinking to myself, but surely you should know these things already. This is quite a bizarre thing to include. And then also, I just had to ask myself, how do these modules help to actually solve the two big problems within the party, which is very fractured at the moment? And that is, of course, factionalism and corruption.
Absolutely. And, you know, Liz, if you want to read up about the history of the ANC, if you want to dust up your knowledge about the Constitution, maybe go take a visit to the library. But I think you bring up so many important points here. But maybe we should not be the pessimistic journalists. Maybe something good will come out of this.
It's all eyes on the States, as former President Donald Trump and current Vice President Kamala Harris battle it out for America's vote. To date, the presidential race has delivered its fair share of the ridiculous, with candidates on both sides serving up moments that seemed rather surreal. But meme-worthy moments aside, this year's presidential battle could have far-reaching implications for South Africa and the world.
Now, speaking of politics, this week is all about the US elections, of course, and with the polling stations set to open on Tuesday, the 5th of November. I've been keeping a very close eye on the various polls, and really, the race between Trump and Harris is now neck and neck. However, it does seem that the swing states are where it's at, with Trump only slightly ahead in polling numbers across 5 of the 7 swing states. So he might actually clinch this, which makes me extremely anxious. So what is your take on the election campaign so far? What are some of your predictions? What do you hope to see? And what do you think we are more likely to see?
Yeah. 2016, when it was Trump versus Hillary Clinton, a lot of people made predictions and they were left with egg on their face. Mm-hmm. I was one of those people because
I never
saw a Trump presidency ever in my lifetime. And going into these elections, Liz, unfortunately, I'm going to take a very safe approach and not make any predictions. But I can tell you what I'm hopeful for, or hoping.
Yeah.
To me, it does not make sense why this election, the polls are neck and neck, Trump versus Harris. The choice for me is very simple. You have someone who is a former prosecutor in the name of Kamala Harris. You have a felon, someone who faces multiple charges and crimes, and that is Donald Trump. Someone who is unfit to lead. I don't know why people would go with him versus what the other alternative seems very stable, and that is Kamala Harris. But I think the race is very interesting. I think it's a race about someone who wants to uphold the Constitution and people's rights, and one who wants to undo those rights. Mm. To me, the choice is very simple, but I don't understand American politics. Apparently, it isn't as simple as that. But really, one hopes that whatever outcome comes out of these elections is one in which the rule of law is respected, the Constitution is respected, and the stability as well going forward.
Absolutely. Now, I want to just quickly get your thoughts on the markets and the impact a Harris win could have on specifically the South African markets, but also what a Trump win could have, because we have things like AGOA that are on the line. So what are some of the things that South Africans might experience under a Trump or a Harris win?
Well, South Africa has experienced a Trump presidency, and the Trump presidency was all about protectionism, meaning that Trump wanted to protect the American economy and placing America's economy first, and even potentially closing out the American economy from the world. I mean, the US is a big trading partner of South Africa, that is. And a Trump presidency might close South Africa off to the US market, because again, Trump wants to place American interests first. So we might see Trump really continue with that approach and not really opening up the US to South Africa in terms of trade. Whereas a Kamala presidency has committed to continuing trade, opening up the American economy to the world. And that's where you might see AGOA continue. So really, Trump wants to close America to the world. Kamala wants to open up the world to the US. Whatever outcome throughout the elections, it is one in which it will impact South Africa's economy.
In 2017, South Africa was rocked by what is now deemed the biggest listeriosis outbreak in the world. It killed more than 180 people, and hundreds of families are still living with the devastating impact years later. In 2018, legal firm Richard Spoor Incorporated, representing about 1,000 families, filed a class action lawsuit against Tiger Brands, the company believed to have been responsible for the unprecedented outbreak. But legal proceedings have stalled while families battle on. Now, there might be hope for at least some of those affected by the deadly outbreak.
Let's move on to a bit of positive news and a slightly positive development that's really been long in the making. And honestly, in my opinion, this should have never taken this long. You have the food giant Tiger Brands finally stepping up to offer much needed relief, medical relief for victims of the 2017-2018 listeriosis outbreak. This past week, the company began negotiations with the legal team behind the class action lawsuit to basically determine which individuals have urgent medical needs and how they can assist them in covering those costs. It's a big, big win for the families who have suffered really debilitating health complications as a result of the listeriosis outbreak.
Indeed, Liz. And importantly, Tiger Brands says offering this kind of support to those families, it is not an admission of guilt. But I mean, multiple studies have been conducted for many years now, which also point the origins of the bacteria coming from a Tiger Brands factory. Mm-hmm. How Tiger Brands is still denying any wrongdoing, it really baffles me. But I guess we can call this a small victory for the families. But I think for me, the first prize would be if Tiger Brands admits to wrongdoing and for justice to finally be meted out against Tiger Brands.
Definitely. Because we've spoken to some of the families recently. I know that Daily Maverick also covered this in recent weeks, where we just kind of reflected on the impact this has had on the families. I mean, you have children with debilitating lifelong neurological problems, birth defects, and how these families have to literally indebt themselves to care for their children. So really, for me, that is a massive win. But yes, as you've said, Tiger Brand's liability in the outbreak is yet to be determined by the court, although I can't see it going any other way than them being found liable in this, because as you've said, there's genetic testing, tracing it back to the source. It's undeniable. I'm just happy that this is some closure for at least some of the families, not all of them yet, but it's some form of closure, which I think they desperately, desperately need.
Yeah, and it's all about justice. And I think I don't like incidences of half justice. I want full justice for any wrongs that were committed to be acknowledged first and take remedy steps.
Definitely. Well, it's been a fascinating discussion. We've gone from politics to international news to health matters, and it's always so much fun to spend time with you, and thank you for making the time, and yeah, have a fabulous week.
Thanks, Liz. Always a pleasure speaking to you.
Thanks for listening. Catch us again next week for another Whole Week Wrap. Until then, why not join the conversation on Twitter, Facebook, and everywhere else? We always love hearing from you.